All right, today we are joined by a directing team. We're joined by the directing team of Matt Bettinelli Open and Tyler Gillette, the men behind Radio Silence. You've seen their movies. You've seen Ready or Not. You've seen Scream 5, Scream 6, Abigail, Devil's Due, and you are gonna see on March 20th their new movie, Ready or Not 2. We're here with the Radio Silence boys. How you doing, Matt and Tyler?
Hey! Yes. So we're extremely excited to be here. I know we said this earlier, but like, my God. This
now
is
you have to say
the preamble.
Yes.
Yes.
So let's run it back, guys. What makes you fans of us?
How long you got?
Where do we begin?
You know, when we used to do our own shorts, I'm not even kidding, and we used to do shorts and we'd drive up to like Lone Pine, we would listen to your guys' episodes the whole way.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, so, all the time.
Yeah. Then I can comfortably ask, because we talked about this, we want to keep this light, we want to keep this fun, but would you feel that your entrance into the major Hollywood system has given you information that you're trying to disseminate through your pop culture films in a way that we would find entertaining and not frightening due to the truth of the information that you hold?
Yes, they're warnings.
Oh, yeah, we're just fully training the masses.
Interesting.
You're going to get us killed.
Are you excited that there's two of you? That way, if one of you mysteriously has a heart attack after this comes out, they can't do it to both of you.
Yes, we will. The Radio Silence legacy will continue on.
Honestly,
it's a long game. We've been planning.
If there was a way for the government to leave your bodies, how would you want that? Like, honestly, how would you choose the government to kill you both?
Oh, man.
Oh, I want to be found in, like, a fountain at a shopping mall. Like, a busy shopping mall.
Okay.
I think would be great.
No, we can make that happen. Yeah, no problem.
We can fall through the skylight to make sure that it's,
that's fun.
At the busiest time of the holiday season, you fall through the skylight and
impaled into the middle fountain. Yes.
Yeah. And, of course, the little girl must scream.
Yeah. Matt, how do you want to die?
By the government. Could it be one of those things where it's like there's a bunch of versions of it, so there's a bunch of conspiracy theories,
and it becomes
one of those "is he dead" things?
You're poisoned. Oh. You're shot. You're hung from the ceiling. Yes. You're electrocuted. Yeah.
Yes.
In like different countries, and so there's a bunch of mystery.
His suicide note was just the letter Y.
Yes. Just know, I will make
just
sure
a thumbs up.
I will make sure your penis is preserved in formaldehyde for the rest
Thank
of
you.
Time.
I didn't want to ask, but
the Moody Museum's already on the line.
Yeah,
it's great. We're gonna have it there for you.
They're desperate for cock.
So let me ask you guys, how much? Why do you hate the rich so much?
Yeah.
Because obviously I'm looking at your home.
I don't know. It's
you
weird.
You ain't it.
Yeah, on the sort of desperate climb to reach that, it's very odd how critical we are of it, right?
Yeah, but because you know, the Ready or Not films, like both of them, are definitely like criticisms on the rich and how they play with the rich. I mean, we're doing a series on the DuPont, like we're working on a series on the DuPonts right now, and you know the DuPont Foxcatcher murder was very much just a man playing with the lives of those that they see below them. Like, what is it about that with the Ready or Not films that you guys, you know, wanted to bring to the forefront?
Abigail too.
And Abigail as well, yeah.
Yeah, Abigail's a lot of it. It's unfortunately just a truism. It's an evergreen truth that the rich will take advantage of everybody else, right? At the end of the day.
Yeah.
And I think,
yeah, and that a long enough timeline, if you've achieved that level of success, there's no way that you've avoided exploiting somebody or something on the path to that. That's just how the world operates, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So you have no grace for good billionaires.
Don't be one.
Who are the good billionaires? Are there good billionaires?
Do you not have any empathy for billionaires? Do you think of how much pressure
the
it
ones
is?
That give it all away. The ones that give it all away.
I mean,
yeah.
Come on. Did you see how concerned Bill Gates was about his wife's STA?
He was
STI.
Super concerned.
Yes, I saw that. I know. Oh my God.
But
how much money has Mackenzie Scott given away now? What's the current?
That's Bezos' ex-wife?
I think 70.
Yeah, the running tally.
She must have so much fun throwing his money into every single place. But like, that must be a blast.
So satisfying.
Yeah. I was just like, this is $1 billion to keep men bald. This is what.
The anti-Viagra donations.
Has the last podcast got any of that Mackenzie Scott dough? Has she kicked any of it your way, guys? Or you just,
we haven't, have we?
Obviously, you could see I had my tits enhanced. all of this body is reconstructed. This is no way. No one would choose this naturally. This doesn't happen naturally. So, yeah.
It is interesting to see in horror movies how it mirrors society a lot of times. And I feel like you guys are really hitting that nail on the head. Did you grow up wealthy? How do you know so much about these societies?
You know, it's funny. I actually had a brush with it when I was a teenager. One of my really good friends who I was in a band with for a lot of years was Daniel Steele's son. And it was a very funny, I was like in a punk band, just a bunch of scrappy kids. And then our singer was Daniel Steele's son. And, you know, and he was a lovely, wonderful person who was like one of my best friends. But it was a weird toe dip into, I live in Oakland. I'm up at my parents' house actually right now. And he lived in San Francisco. And it was a weird toe dip into this entire other world that, you know, I don't think most of us are familiar with.
Daniel Steele, the author?
The author. Yeah.
Do you think that?
Yeah. Her son was this guy, Nick, and he was wonderful. And he was really
conflicted. But it was complicated, right?
It was really
complicated.
Complicated
relationship with his wealth. And yeah.
We didn't know that he was her. He joined the band. We were kids. I mean, we were like teenagers, and he joined the band, I think, when we were like maybe 16 or something. And it was at least probably, I mean, it felt like forever as a kid, but it was probably like 6 months before we even knew that his mom was Danielle Steele. But there were like weird tells where like someone would drop him off at practice and there was like a car phone. This is like in the 90s.
Yeah.
So it was like, what? You have a car phone?
Do you feel it gave him extra room to just be something extra and something special that it was harder for somebody like you?
What's weird, I mean, again, I could go on about this forever because he's probably one of the most charismatic, talented people I ever knew. And he had this like real, there's a duality that was obvious all the time where he had this life that was different than the life that we all kind of lived with him. I mean, we just did it like normal, like in a van with a bunch of guys sleeping on floors. And then he'd come home and he had a different life. But he was, it's like we were saying a second ago, he was always very conflicted about it. And he was kind of embarrassed in the way that a teenager is embarrassed about anything that they're not comfortable with around their friends. I don't know if that answers the question, but yeah, it was weird. I'm just going down memory lane now.
this is a great No Dogs in Space moment where we get to have that little trivia of the lead singer of Link 80 was Daniel Steele's son. That's incredible. I didn't know that. Because you guys were the first band signed to Asian Man Records, right?
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. You got a little bit of punk past. So like in that, what, like, have you ever thought about like using that punk past to kind of make a like green room style, like punk horror movie?
I mean, we've talked about it a lot, right, Tyler? Like there's been a lot of, it's such a fucking rad subculture and a world to live in, especially in the 90s. It was so like special. And at least it felt like that to me at the time. But you're always, the entire experience is you're going to like the worst places with like the scariest people who you've never met before. And then you're like, let's play songs and run into each other and jump on each other for a few hours. And then go to somebody's random house in the backwoods somewhere to do whatever shit we're going to get into. Every turn in that feels like there's an on-ramp to some great movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that sort of band past, I mean, that's very much built into like just how, you know, the two of us work. Like we were a band of five when we started out and now we're just a sort of shitty old duet. But like the idea of just like you know, like
normally
it's
the opposite. Normally they start as a hot duet, and then all of a sudden there's like a horn section. You know,
we started with the horn section, and now we're down to like some ukuleles.
Yeah, do you guys?
That's how we run everything. You know, like we're just we show up on set and we want everyone to just play their instrument as loud as possible. And I mean, it's very, very similar in, you know, in its process to just playing with your buds.
Yeah. Do you ever look at directors who direct movies alone and think that they're chumps who work too hard?
Dude.
Yes.
Yes. We have buds. I mean, so many friends. Like, they're just on an island alone with their anxiety. Fuck that,
man. Yeah. Our buds who are directors, we talk to them about it. And there's a very consistent from everything like, oh, wait, one of you can just go like to the bathroom during the day without the entire crew
fucking thing shutting down.
Yeah, it's not like I got eyes on Tyler. He's going into the bathroom. It's just a, hey man, I'll be right back. To the moment to moment thing of like, hey, this isn't working. How do we get through this? And it's so nice to not be stuck in some world where you have to believe you have all the answers and they have to be perfect, to have that relationship where we can just be like, I don't think this is working. What do we do? And in the moment, you know, like a sport or like a band, just kind of get through it together. It makes all the difference.
Dialogue about it.
Yeah. And it probably also helped to spread the success and failure to two. You know what I mean? Like,
because
it can't be. Because I'm certain that you walk away, and you have a massive success. One of you walks away and is like, thank God he has me. Yeah. You know, like, and then
one of our favorite things to do is to go on Amazon and read, like, for something that we've made and read the worst reviews. That's no fun to do by yourself. It's only fun if you can, like, screen grab it and send it to your friend.
Is there one that, like, really stands out in your mind that, like, that actually that was very clever?
Oh shit, I mean, we can pull some up and read them. We can do a
don't give them any fucking credit. Don't fucking give them an inch.
You guys ever commiserate with the Filippo brothers? Do you know them at all? You ever talk about being directing duos?
No, we haven't
met them. It's a small group of people. When the DJ occasionally puts on these events and all the co-directors end up sitting at the same table, and it's a small.
It's the kids' table. Like, it's the outcast table.
Yeah, and we're all looked down on by the rest of the DGA, you know. And it's like Phil and, you know, Phil Lord and Chris Miller. I mean, like, good fucking, like, great people, great directors, but we're all the step kids.
Do you think that's what happened to the Coen brothers? Is they were so sick of that fucking table?
Yeah, they were never at our table, weirdly enough.
Can we get them at separate tables just to get them back together?
they do the president of the DGA one year did come up to us at our table, and I remember it was like Akiva and Yorma from Lonely Island and us and I think Chris and Phil, but they straight up said, so it's like a half a brain each. How does this work?
You're
like, why do you need each other?
We're both going to attack you. That's how it works.
Yeah, totally. I like that. And the other's attacking from behind.
I have a technical question. I because Ready or Not, Abigail, these are, a lot of it has really, really intense, awesome action pieces, which I think are probably the hardest thing. In like stunt action things are probably one of the hardest things you shoot, right? When you're going through this, when you are building these things out, how specific are you in the script versus it changing as you go on the day? Like all of the things that Samara Weaving goes through in Ready or Not, is all of that fully scripted, or are you also playing things by ear and changing things as you go?
It's always pretty loose. I mean, I think you have to have somewhat of a blueprint. There has to be some specificity so you can design the set and, you know, get all of the ingredients for the sequence have to sort of show up. And so that has to be present in the script. But like with Ready or Not too, I mean, we were moving so fast and flying so by the seat of our pants with the sequel that we knew, you know, the sort of broad strokes of how the thing was going to start and like how it had to conclude and what that had to sort of mean emotionally for the characters. But within that, if you've got a great stunt team that is really good at improvising, I mean, it's like watching any sort of great, you know, performer improvise. You sort of look at the set and what you have, and oh, we've got these things are all breakaway, and the brainstorm in the, you know, in the moment of, well, shit, let's throw this person through this. And it's one of the most fun things because it is so alive. And I mean, the only big stunt things that have to ever feel for us anyway, are like super, super planned and rehearsed are the things where you're like pulling people up into the sky and, you know, wire work, things that require real rigging and there's real danger. You know, you just have to premeditate all of that. But the fight stuff, man, it's really fun to watch. And by the way, to throw at a cast member like, hey, we know you rehearsed this. What if we do this? It's amazing to see how, you know, most of the fighting in our movies, you know, it's not like John Wick shit. You're watching people like in a bar fight, basically. That's yeah. The kind of action that we love. And that stuff, like, it lends itself to this very improvisational kind of style. But it is the hard stuff to shoot, man.
Samara Weaving's a fucking star, and she's also one of those
such
people. She sells the physical acting of a because, like, normally you got these, like, skinny leading ladies. They don't look like they can't kill people. They can't kill fucking people. Samara, I believe, can yeah. kill people.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, did
oh,
you? Yeah. Did you know that she had that, like, her guttural primal scream is one of the best in the business? Did you know that she could do that before you got her on set?
No, we had no clue. No. When she did that the first time, I remember us being, it was very early because we shot the end of the first Ready or Not first. It was all in the first week. And when she did her, she like rolls off the table and does like, screams. And that was the first time we heard it. And it was like, oh my God. What
yeah, everybody
fuck?
On set was like,
yeah,
yeah.
It, and then when we went into this movie to the sequel, we definitely that was a thing. We were like, where is the right moment for this?
Yeah,
and we found a really good one that we were like, oh yeah, that's when this has to happen because you can't overuse it. You
no,
can't make
of course,
it.
Yeah,
you have to like save it. You have to be like, this is you're waiting for this. It's like when you're waiting for like that special part of a song.
But Sam's a unicorn. I think one of her superpowers is like she is. One of the most beautiful human beings you'll ever see, but there's zero vanity in the way that she approaches like every moment of her life. She's so gross and silly and isn't afraid to like fuck up and be weird. And you know, there's, she's fearless and you need that for that character very specifically.
You're saying she, so in other words, she's Australian.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
I remember I met Margot Robbie and she was like that. She'd like burp and spit and then go like, sorry there, mate. Like do that. And you're like, I'm mesmerized. You're literally, you can do anything. You can do anything. I love you. Anything you want.
It's the best. There's actually a moment in Ready or Not 2 where Sam was like, I want to spit at the end of this. Is that cool? We're like, absolutely. Please
go
do. Please hawk a big loogie.
Yeah, Ready or Not 2, we got to see it. It's such an incredibly fun movie.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, man. It's such a great time.
It is so much fun, just as good as the first one. But, like, I mean, you guys, like, one
Thanks,
of the
guys.
Things that I love about y'all's movies is that your sense of pacing is so fucking good. Like, you really know how to pace a movie. So, like, when you approach a movie like as directors, do y'all see yourselves as like primarily like horror directors or action directors? Because y'all are just action. You're so fucking good at it.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, we never like think about it too specifically because I think the way we came up, it's like we were both like raised on Twilight Zone. You know, like that was like the touchstone that started everything for us. And so it was sort of like, we love genre stuff. We love sci-fi. We love horror. We love action. We love adventure. And so like when we first started working together, a lot of our stuff would kind of dip into, it would like one little 10-minute short would be sci-fi, horror, and adventure all kind of mixed up together. And I think we've just taken that with us because it's like, we feel weird when something's not edging towards scary. We feel weird when something's not edging towards action. And we also feel weird when it's like lacking emotion, because that's kind of what we always tie everything together with is how do you get, you know, someone like Samara at the center of this that can kind of ground all of the action, all of the horror, all of the emotion and make it feel like it's cohesive in one thing is always sort of the goal. But it's a bit of we love it all and we get to play, you know, kind of for a living now, which is incredible. So it's this how can we make this more actiony? How can we make this more scary? I mean, that's a conversation we have, I think, all the time. It's like, let's lean harder this direction or that direction.
Yeah, and it's so fun to like have a grab bag of tricks, right? Like you don't, and tropes to play with. All of those little subgenres, they have little dials that you can turn at different moments. And so it just means you have so many tools at your disposal to, at the end of the day, like surprise the audience. And that's the movies that we grew up on did that so effortlessly. And it feels like, you know, I mean, we could go on and on about like how the business and distribution has changed and how niche things have become because of streaming. Like we loved like, you know, Terminator and Aliens and like those movies that felt like they could do all of these things. And it all felt so effortless. And it was because, you know, these were big ideas that were being made for huge audiences for everybody to see instead of just one person interested in like robots sitting on their couch, you know, in their house. And that's the, we have a real muscle memory for those types of movies and are really just trying to like replicate the feeling of that in the stuff that we make.
Yeah, man. Going to the theater is fucking awesome. I love it so much. Your movie comes out on March 20th, correct? Ready or Not 2?
Yeah,
dude. So make sure you go out and see that movie in the theater. It's big fucking action movie, big horror movie. You guys are going to love it. I'm sure it's going to be amazing. But I got to ask about like...
Oh, I thought you were going to hardcore. We were talking about Gaza now, right?
Yeah.
You're now it's a hardcore. You give him the glove. You set him up with the knife.
Actually, yes. not Gaza, but I'm excited when you see this because obviously we all want the movie theaters to survive. I go to the movies at least once a week. We want everything to be, you know, be great. Now, when everything that's going on in the news right now with the files coming out, are you looking at this and be like, we can't buy this type of publicity? Like, are you like
I will say,
it is shocking and disappointing how topical the movies that we make have become,
and sad how unsurprising it is.
Yeah.
But the weird thing that we saw bubble up when they released the new trailer was that this is Hollyweird conditioning people to be, Henry, I believe you were circling this at the beginning, conditioning people to be used to the idea. Yeah, I'm sorry.
I believe I just said it out right.
Do the Laudomas family represent any particular family? Do you have an inspiration?
Oh, man, you are really trying to make a step in it.
all the families.
You're just laying fucking traps.
I think we all know. I think we know.
No, but it's the fun of, like, living in this sort of heightened world of these billionaires is it feels like you can sort of be broad and specific at the same time. And, you know, it also, I mean, it's fun to, like, look at a class that is so out of reach for everyone that isn't in it that you can dream up the wackiest thing and it's probably not that wacky. And I think that was really the compass, like the sort of guiding light for us on both of these movies was, well, fuck, we don't know. Like, what's the craziest rich people shit you could think of? And, yeah, just bummed that some of it is
real.
Some of it's real.
Yeah. Dude, when you go into these executives' offices, this is one of my favorite phenomenas in this whole new awareness that we're getting as a country right now, I guess, which is you get to go into these very, very powerful people's rooms, the most elite of the entertainment industry, and you pitch these things. What are the looks on their faces? Like when you say, like, so this is when they systematically murder all of the rich people, and are they just sitting there just going like, ha, 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 that is simply fantasy? Like, is it just like, what a wonderful trip down a dream world that cannot happen? Like, do you think that, like, how do they react in those rooms, like in being in that world?
I think we're surprised at how much everybody's always into it. It always feels like,
I think there's enough self-awareness, and a willingness to kind of to hold up a mirror.
Because they better.
I mean, I felt that way when I watched the Hunt that came out recently, and like how it showed like bloodthirsty Democrats, and you know, I was like, this is a lot of fun.
Sure,
I had a great time with this, you know, and so I'm enjoying this. But you guys really, not only do you focus on the rich, you focus on Satan.
Yes,
and so Satan is a big part of your thing. It's Satanism. Are you all Satanists? Do you dabble?
I was raised Catholic.
You're halfway there, buddy. You're halfway there, buddy. I was raised Catholic too, man.
You're halfway there. Don't think that I didn't notice that you slipped the satanic version of Hallelujah into Ready or Not. I heard it.
I was gonna ask, what
the
did you guys
Levian
pick up
Satanism.
On? 'Cause this one, there's a lot of in this. It was funny. There was a lot of conversations when we were going, you know, going in like pre-production where we went back and we looked at. There's this thing that the studios do where they do a toe dip with critics, and so before the movie's even finished, they show like a dozen critics, and then they tell
Never
you how shitty
idea.
Your movie is. It's
Never
the worst.
Good idea.
And they tell you how it's shitty, and then you're just kind of bummed for a few weeks until you totally forget about it, which has happened on both of these movies. And we went back when we were making this and looked at what the critics said about the first movie, and like the number one headline was all the Satan stuff is awful and horrible and needs to go.
Maybe don't say Satan so much.
What?
Yeah. And it was quite, for us, we were like, well, they're going to hate this next one because it goes a whole lot harder.
So much harder. It goes so fucking hard with the Satanism. And I love that. That's what I love so much about it, because I'm a huge fan. Like some of my favorite horror movies are the 70s Hammer horror films that really dig into the Satanism. Yes. Like, was this movie, Ready or Not 2, was it inspired by movies like, you know, Devil's Reign, To the Devil a Daughter, like where there, you know, there's these cabals lurking in the background?
I mean, all of it. We talked a lot about and I think it maybe had to do with having come off of Abigail, because we talked a lot about like the Christopher Lee stuff,
yeah,
where it's just so gothic and it's so, there's such a vibe. And our thing on this was the Ledomuses in the first one are like low rent amateur versions of Satanists, kind of like pretending because maybe they saw a movie once and they put on a stupid fucking robe. And so with this one, we were like,
he says it in the movie, in the first one, he's like, oh, it was the 80s. It was like the first thing he talked about.
Exactly. They're playing make-believe. It's like when you hear like how the mob watched The Godfather and we're like, oh, we're going to do that. That's our new thing.
Yeah.
And then for this one, we were like, yeah, but what if these guys are good at it? Like, what if they've got a cool temple and they've got the real robes and they like got the real goat pit and all this kind of fun stuff. So it's kind of a spoiler. Sorry, I didn't realize I was dipping into that, but
audiences got to know. I think that brings them in. I think it brings them in.
I think they're going to like that. Our audience is going to like that. There's more Satan. They're going to like, I mean, you use the words goat pit in relation to a movie. Our audience is going to go see it.
Yeah, that's actually like a good thing for them.
Yeah.
I like when sequels, but honestly, I like when sequels expand versus like, let's just do the whole thing again.
Yeah, I love it. No, the world building in this was like so much fun. Like you really expand it because it's a direct sequel. I mean, it begins where the first movie ends. So like, was there any like challenges to doing a direct sequel to a movie?
I think the big thing for us was just knowing that over the seven years since we made the first one, that it somehow like magically found a fandom, that we wanted to deliver something that felt satisfying and obviously in the world of the first movie without being overly precious about it. I all of our favorite sequels, you know, like T2 and Aliens, like they take the DNA of what's great about the first movie and they apply it to something new and fresh and surprising. And ultimately, like those movies, whether you see the first or not, like you can be such a fan of and enjoy them as a singular experience. And I think for us that the pressure was just, how do we make something and not be afraid to, in some ways, like maybe shit on the first movie a little bit and not be overly cautious and not try to be like too nostalgic about what it is, but to maybe challenge
ourselves and challenge the audience's notion of what the movie could be. And it was fun, but there was a lot of pressure in it too, because you obviously want to deliver something that people, you know, that people love and enjoy in the same way as the first movie.
The first movie felt really effortless. I feel like that's what's so beautiful about that movie, is the reason why it found its audience is because it is wholly its own. And it feels real. It feels awesome. I love their reactions, the family's reactions, and they're so fucking funny. And I guess that's also what works about it, is that it's funny, scary, bloody.
Yeah, totally. And I think that like so much is like, and what we were sort of talking about, like the Satanist stuff, that we love the idea of the modern interpretation of something like really ancient and full of tradition, and how just bastardized that has become. And by the way, I feel like that happens with all old institutions. And we love that you have people with all of like trappings of modern life, like still trying to like hold on to something that has its roots in a time and a mythology that are maybe like not even understandable. It's so old and so, you know, so uncanny and strange. And that to us is like where all of that fun lives, like people, you know, like not knowing if the fucking devil exists. Like all of that's just so, it's just so sticky and fun.
How important was it to you that you be incredibly accurate about Satanism? Were you? I don't even know personally, to be honest.
Unfortunately, no, but I love you both.
I would love to know everything that we got wrong and how we did
because
we had like a, there's a whole, like Elijah does a whole chant or speech or, you know, I don't know what you call sermon that you can kind of hear at the beginning of it before. And that was one that we, Ryan, one of the writers, Guy and Ryan are the writers, and Ryan, he's big into this stuff. And he was like, I'm going to get you guys a nice long thing. So he wrote us out and it was funny. We did it in ADR and Elijah Wood was like, okay, so I'm just reading this. What? I hope I'm not like, this is not some incantation. Like, what is this entire paragraph?
No, it's easy to write stuff that sounds like it. You know what's funny is that in my mind, when I look at those types of ritual sequences, whenever it throws to Satan, it's like, I think it's good for the audience to understand because I think most people, the audience doesn't fully understand Satanism as a whole and all that. Like, so it's like fine. But it's like, to me, I always want to see a specific demon. That is like literally my actual like nitpick with every one of these, which is I want a specific demon and a specific ritual for a specific demon. Otherwise, I'm good to go.
Who is Belial?
Belial's one of Satan's guys.
LaBelle. LaBelle. It's an anagram
based
of Belial. Belial. Another name for Satan? Henry, right?
No, he's one of the guys. He's a figure representing ultimate wickedness.
No, I've just always think of that, oh, the guy in the basket.
That's where I always go to.
Because you know what it is that in Satanism, they replaced blood sacrifices with sex sacrifices. So the idea is that eventually Anton LaVey was trying to say, no, we don't sacrifice animals. We come. That's what to mimic the spurt of energy from the neck of an animal. Like, essentially, that's what you're doing. You are recreating the creative burst of life that is a flow of blood from a freshly opened vein, but you are transmuting it with your powerful seed.
Yeah.
Did you know your movie was about that?
Yeah. And my question is now, is if for Ready or Not 3, are you going to have people explode with cum instead of blood?
Yes.
And just have cum explosions?
I think you just unlocked how we up the ante here.
Yeah.
You know how they said that they pitched Aliens where James Cameron went in the room and he wrote Alien and then he wrote like a dollar sign after Aliens? You just write Ready or Not 3. Come.
Yeah.
But like here underneath on the big
here we come. Yeah,
here we come. Underneath it. Because here two is here I come.
Big square
three
around
here
it.
We come with a U.
The come in the title is not accidental, guys.
But otherwise, it was great. I think the Satanism was great.
Yeah.
Awesome. Fantastic.
Live from your grave.
let's take a break to thank our sponsor, Searchlight. Ready or Not 2, Here I Come is a biting and hilarious satire revealing the absurdities underpinning wealth, tradition, and exclusivity. Moments after surviving an all-out attack from the Lodomas family, Grace discovered she's reached the next level of the nightmarish game, and this time, her estranged sister, Faith, is at her side. Grace has one chance to survive. Keep her sister alive and claim the high seat of the council that controls the world. I can't wait for you all to see this movie. If you liked Ready or Not 1, this one takes it up to a freaking 11. The blood, the action, it's so much fun. And guess what, folks? You get to see rich people die. You love it! Directed by Matt Bettinelli Olpen and Tyler Gillette, the full tilt insanity of the action and combusting villains is a sharp and unsparing takedown of the kinds of people that crave power. Ready or Not 2 is now playing only in theaters. Get tickets now.
Speaking of the explosions, like, how much fun is it to make people explode on camera? Like, to do those, like, pops?
So extremely. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
evolved over the course of the many people we've exploded. The first movie was like just a literal like pyrotechnics in a plastic bag full of goo. Mm. And now we've sort of moved on to safer, more reliable technology now. Our guys on this movie engineered this blood cannon that looks like a drone out of, you know, Star Wars. It has all these holes cut in the side and awesome. These kind of fins that stick out of it. And they hook it up to a big pneumatic tank and just like fire air through this thing, fill it with blood and fire pressurized air through it. And it's,
awesome.
I mean, there really is like a feeling of excitement on set. Those events are the reason you show up, you know, it's like there's a countdown, and I mean everything about it. It just feels so grand and exciting and messy as hell. It's just it's a blast. It's
how
like
hard is that to live in it?
This level,
you don't reset. They're one and done. They are. Yeah. It is, and then the rest of the day or week or however long it has to be there, the set is sticky and gross and
for the rest of the time.
But it's a vibe. It's fun. It's, you know.
I love that. That's great. What do you use? Karo syrup? Do you know? What's your blood? What's your blood mixture?
We used the same mix on the last few movies, and it's a mix of Karo syrup, and then they sort of thin it out for the blood cannons because you want more projection. And then the stuff that we use on the actors is just a more viscous, because it stretches better. Like you get the webbing and all of that, you know, that great effect that feels really cinematic. And so you can kind of water it down. Sometimes they put dish detergent in it, like dish soap.
Yes.
Which also help it not break up.
And bubble a little bit.
So there are a bunch of little tricks of the trade, but it's,
and then it helps clean easier too.
Mix a few times.
Yeah. One question I had you on set, you had legendary director David Cronenberg as an actor. Now, when you're looking at this fucking guy, how do you tell him what to do? Like, what is he doing? How do you tell him what to do? Is he one of those where it's like, I dare you to direct me? Like, is it one of those?
I mean, he's the nicest fucking dude. That idea came about. Our casting director was, we were trying to find some, we had to cast it locally. And he was like, David Cronenberg is a Toronto native and might be into this. And we were like, oh my fucking God, that is the best idea we've ever heard. And it was literally one call and Cronenberg was like, yeah, I'm in. And
wow. You didn't have to push the script through like a membrane. Like I thought that you'd have to,
exactly.
You'd have to push it through an open sphincter into like a goo.
But he was so lovely though. Like just the sweetest guy. And like was like, I really like the way you run the set. Like just a lovely, 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 lovely dude. But giving him any direction was, I mean,
nerve wracking.
Just feel like you're starstruck the entire time. Yeah.
Yeah, it was, but he couldn't have been kinder. He was like, he very much was like, you guys just tell me what you need, you know? And Of course, it's like,
do the thing that you do. Just do what you do, Mr. Cronenberg. And he's like, I will haunt your dreams. Yes, of course I will haunt your dreams. You know how many different ways I can have sex with surgery? I think about it all day. Organs and blood and organs.
Now, we had a little technical difficulty and we loosely talked about this, but I want to bring it back around. We love that you're doing all this action stuff and you're bringing action to the horror movies. And of course, you cast Sarah Michelle Gellar. Like, who better to, like, fucking do a bunch of action scenes than Buffy? We haven't seen her in a while. Was that one of your ideas? Was that a casting move? Like, who was this? This is great. My wife was so happy.
Well, Sarah was she raised her hand. It was late in the process. We had been trying to cast that role, and I feel like it was like 2 weeks out. Does that sound right, Tyler?
Yeah, it was too close.
And she,
it was too close.
We were like, oh my God, how are we going to shoot this? We had a lot of another story, but Samara's back was basically broken leading up to shooting, and we didn't have either of the brother sister roles cast, and so it was like, oh my God, how are we going to start this movie in 2 weeks? And then we got so lucky that somehow Sarah heard about it and said, I would be way into that. And so we Zoomed with her and she was on a plane like a week later, and it couldn't have been cooler. Couldn't have been like more just into everything and excited about it. And one of her first notes was though, that her character before she had been cast, her character's weapon was a crossbow. And she was like, this just might be a little too Buffy.
Yeah, fair.
He's such a pro though. I feel like we've had the chance to work with, you know, a few actors that have just been doing it since they were kids. And I mean, it's insane to see somebody that's just that good at what they do. They show up, they like know exactly what the moment needs. And you nudge here and there, but for the most part, you just do a bunch of takes because you can't stop watching them be awesome. And that was Sarah every single day.
She's great. She's
yeah, incredible. I did. You know, I was looking at the cast for all your movies, and I know that you guys have worked with a lot of people who have done a ton of TV, like people who were in for The OC, for Friday Night Lights, Friends, Lost, fucking Downton Abbey. You know, you got Matthew, for fuck's sake.
The guy from the pit. He was great.
Yeah, do you notice, like, as a director, is there a difference between actors who have done like primarily TV and actors who have done like primarily film?
Oh, that's a great question. I feel like
TV actors always feel like they understand like the sort of run and gun pace of things in a different way, right? Like they're used to. I remember, talking to Sean on this one, he's like, "Yeah, we show up on the set of The Pit and we're like jamming through 12 pages a day." And, you know, you land on a film set and like you're lucky to get through 5.5 without it feeling, really, really pinched. And so I think that they come into it with like an energy. There's this sort of like caged animal, like, fuck, we got to like get out of the gate and run as fast as we can. And I think they love to have time to give more. And we've found that with all of the cast that has TV experience. They like show up super on book, super prepared, because that's what TV demands of them, right? That you just, you gotta get it and move on. And
you gotta be locked in, and they don't like when you're slow.
Yeah. And because of that pace, like they get to do a lot of different things, right? It's shows that, you know, like Buffy, for example, I mean, tons of action, tons of emotional stuff. And so there's a real sort of like school of work that comes out of that process.
And it's also coming in with like a strong, coming in with like a strong choice already made. Cause it's like, I gotta be there on take one. Cause I remember, just to talk about Matthew Good for a second and Abigail, I mean, he shot for half a day on that movie. It was the last half of the day of the whole shoot. Whew. And he comes in and he's like, So I'm just going to kind of have fun with this and like really take some swings. And we're like, that is exactly, this is the end of the movie. You're fucking Dracula. Just be as big and wild and weird as you want to be. Like, we are here for it, you know?
I remember him coming up to us and like asking like, is it too much? And he even asked Melissa like, is this weird? And she's like, no, the guys will tell you if you cross the line.
Yeah, they'll tell you. It's always easy to give more. You know what I mean? It's easy to give more. Well, I guess the difference between where we talked about television actors and film actors, it looks like you guys are working on the new iteration of The Mummy with Brendan Fraser. Is he bringing back his character from The Whale? You were saying about applying old ideas to new things.
That's it. That's how we're doing it.
Can you just imagine?
This isn't that Mummy. There's a brand new version of The Mummy with that character.
Wow, that's amazing. But honestly, how is it going into this process of, obviously you did Scream films. This is you did a reboot of IP. You've done a couple other things. This is big time. Old school IP.
Yeah.
And they're bringing out, like, how's that?
There's a ride based off of this fucking
movie. Yeah, dude. Like, how do you, what do you have to do with that shit? Like, do you have to go on the ride a lot?
Yeah. It's based on the ride. The movie's actually based on the ride. It's
dude, my best part of that movie's going to be when it goes backwards.
The second half of the movie just rewinds.
Yeah, dude.
We sort of told ourselves after Scream, like, we can't get involved in another, like, you know, pre-existing franchise or something that we didn't originate. And then, like, we started working with the writer, Dave Coggeshall, and our dear friends are producing it, the same dudes that we've been working with for many years.
See, that's a dream.
That's right, or not.
Yeah, and got the band back together. And when we started breaking the story and hearing Dave like pitch on it, it was like, fuck, man, it's just too good to not steer fully into it. And it has remained that. It's like such a special script, and to have the two of them back for it, it just feels really good. It's one of those things. We've been doing this long enough to know that, like, that's ultimately the thing that you follow, is that feeling. And this one just feels, it just feels really fucking good.
Rachel Weisz is coming back too?
Yeah.
She is.
Awesome.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Is it a reboot with the same characters, or is it like a continuation of the, you know, the old 90s Mummy movies?
It's finding them now. I mean, we wanted to not overcomplicate anything. We really wanted to be like, here they are. It's been that many years. This is what they're doing, and here's their new adventure. And that's awesome. making sure that, you know, I think for us, and again, we did this on Scream, we had to really focus on, like, what is the thing that makes this special? You know, like, what is it, and how do we, you know, Tyler, you mentioned this earlier, how do we create the feeling that we all had watching it back then? It doesn't have to be the same thing. It doesn't have to be like nostalgia overload or just like ripping it off, but it has to create the same feeling. And I think for us, when you watch that movie then and now, Rachel and Brendan are that feeling. You know, like, oh my God, they're so good. I just want to be with them doing their thing. And so that was kind of our like headline going into this, was this is about those two characters. Let's have fun with it.
And the Brendan Fraser character has eaten himself into immobility into a wheelchair. And he has he's facing the struggles of being gay. Yes.
Yeah.
He's the mummy.
Mummy for the coming.
This is all of this you can take.
Yeah.
So get fired now, guys.
You guys are monsters.
Yeah. Yeah. My primary memory with this movie is having a really awkward movie date in high school. What are you doing to erase that memory from my head?
we gotta work that in somehow. I have a very funny story about it, but I'll tell you later off camera.
Is the Tom Cruise version dead? Is that just like not have nothing to do with this?
This sort of resets with those original characters.
All right. And is this just, is it a part of the like Universal Monsters universe?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah, dude.
That's awesome. Yeah. Congrats.
Yeah. Fuck yeah, that's man. Awesome. It's going to go cool. in the amusement park, dude. You're going to be the new Mummy Ride Man.
Yeah.
Fucking have it go upside down.
Yeah, we're going to scare him the shit out of you.
No. No, what's it like to be a part of, like, the arguably, like, the greatest horror movie tradition in history?
I mean, it's unreal. Like, honestly, we text each other about it all the time. Where it's like, just like a random text at like midnight, like, holy shit, we're making a mummy movie. Like, how is that real life? Hard.
It's hard to
fucking
like,
crazy.
Not, you also kind of have to forget about that because you know, again, you like, don't want to be hanging on to that too tightly. I think you can feel that in the wrong way. And so it's finding out how to like, express it in the right way. And that's really just what you challenge and what you revive. And it, again, we can't say enough about how stoked we are. We feel so ready, like just on a script level, we could like start shooting now, you know, it's just a lot to build a movie of this size. Yes.
Well, I'll just have you know that the whole country will finally be excited by a project when you reboot George of the Jungle. and that's really not, unfortunately, until we're talking about that, I don't know where the excitement's going to be.
Actually,
I love the idea of just making a bunch of sequels, Brendan Fraser sequels, Airheads,
Biodome.
No. He's
he
not
shows
in,
up as a Sino man in Biodome, I believe.
Briefly.
Yeah.
Very, very briefly, yeah, he very shows quick. Up as it's more of a Pauly Shore vehicle.
And Sino man is now fucking caveman lawyer.
Do you guys need Pauly Shore's info? I can get it.
We can call Pauly Shore for you. We can give him your address.
Yeah. Are you willing to do an Encino Man reboot, a horror Encino Man reboot?
Oh, the dream. I just watched it again. It's so good.
It's really good.
We watched it like really within the past like 6 months, and I was like, this is a fucking great movie.
You ever seen that thing where they showed what Neanderthals would probably sound like? Where they go like,
Yes. Yeah. The high voice.
That's what you gotta do. You reboot Encino Man with a real Neanderthal in them that they dig out. And it's just like, It's like a screaming monkey thing.
We do the serious version of it.
Yes, but with the screaming high-pitched, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Guys, this is awesome.
Oh. Yeah. I mean, is there anything you could tell us? Like, where are you at in the Mummy production? Like, where are you? Have you started shooting yet? Have you got locations?
No, we are scouting. We went on a really amazing scout to Morocco just recently, and so I mean, we're at the beginning. We're at the bottom of a very tall mountain, but we start prep in earnest in a couple months and. I think shooting by end of the summer.
Boys are living the dream.
Yeah. I heard there's a lot of pyramids in Egypt.
Man. Yeah.
You guys, I know you went to Morocco, but you should try Egypt. Think about it. You know, I mean, it just seems logical to me.
It does seem logical.
Have you thought about that?
I want Pauly Shore to get in front of it, but I want this Egypt place. Send me some links on Egypt.
It sounds like you guys really aren't doing this radio silence thing right. I think you need Ed.
Yeah, dude.
I think you need Ed.
You go to
this.
Morocco and you take a right.
Yeah, you really got to go. You just run around the top there. You got to get past all the bad guys. You know, they got your Boko Harams and your ISISs. You just got to skip past them because that's bad for insurance.
And a lot of those guys you can pay off.
Ed, you should run our production services department.
Ready or Not 2 coming out March 20th. Go see it in the theater.
Seriously.
Here I come. It's going to be amazing.
Yeah, it's such a great horror movie, such a great action movie. It's funny. It's just, if you love the first one, you're going to love the second one. And it just I also have to ask, like, how much fun is it to take someone like Elijah Wood and be like, you're going to be the devil's lawyer?
Extremely fun. And like, that was a character on the page too that was, you know, it's a lot of exposition, right? It's a lot of like rules and talking. And we emailed Elijah and said, hey, this is super weird, very random, and it's an interesting character. He doesn't have a name. He's the lawyer. Would you have any interest in coming up to Toronto for a few months and doing this with us? And we can send you the script. And I think he emailed back like the next day. I love it, guys. I'm in. And he just made that his own. And I mean, and Avery, our costume designer, that costume he has is so, it all works together so well. And I mean, Elijah's really like a lot of the magic trick of the movie, right? Because he has to tell you everything in a way that's entertaining when it's rules.
Yeah.
And he's the devil's lawyer, which is
he's a real cooler. G. Elijah Wood's a real motherfucker. Yeah. I like talking
like
to him.
One of the best.
Yeah. He knows what's going on. He also knows movies. I think that's also one thing we're kind of seeing too is a lack of what you're talking about is actors that know what to do. It's because they have a wonderful understanding of film and of watching film and of I feel like that's one thing we're sort of missing. And that's why it's more and more like we got to go to the movie theaters. We have to see these things. We have to have a set of references that's not just saying Labubu FKA Twigs over and over again.
Yeah, and I think for us, it's like, how do you find people that are like Elijah to do the most absurd possible thing with the most seriousness, like with absolute commitment? And that's him.
He's a good guy.
Fantastic. It's a wonderful movie. Yeah.
And I forgive him for North.
Sure. Guys, thank y'all so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Thank you, guys. Dude, this is really, really fucking awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, this is very special to us.